the hole. Both ways was just cheaters that put the problem off on somebody else. The people of the future when the comet came back, or the people of the other plane. I had been picking up bits of the sign exchanges between Raven, Darlin', and Silent without paying much attention, just like you can't help catching snatches of a nearby conversation when it don't really interest you. Raven was getting antsy. He was finger-grumbling about all this sitting around waiting for something to happen instead of getting out and making it happen. He was on his way back, all right. That was the old Raven. You got a problem, you kill somebody, or at least beat the shit out of them. I was almost tempted to yell hey when I caught him volunteering me and him to go look around the landscape where the morning's excitement had taken place. I choked it. Why let the boys downstairs know we were here when Darlin' could tell him to go soak his head? Treacherous witch. She thought it was a great idea. We should drag Bowman's along, just in case a wizard might turn up handy. Silent grinned all the way around his face. The prick saw himself talking his talk and making his pitch every second we were gone. I decided I was going for the head recruiter's job if I was going to get stuck as a rebel for life. The movement could use a few more women. And a few soldiers who weren't screwballs, too. With a little illusion help from Bowman's, we just went downstairs and strutted out the front door, walking like we belonged there. Like Raven said, if we didn't belong, we wouldn't have been in there in the first place, would we? Balls and style. That's my buddy Raven. They had carted the body off with all the others, but we had no trouble finding the place. There was blood all over, and a crowd of kids still hanging around, telling each other all about it. Raven only gave the stains a glance. Bowman's had no use for that scene either. He wasn't looking for dead men. We strolled down the alley the killer had used to make his escape. I was surprised they didn't have soldiers watching, though I couldn't imagine who they'd think they'd be laying for either. It just seemed like something some officer would think was a dandy thing to do. If what officers use their heads for is to think. The place where the two soldiers got killed was a little harder to find because of all the dark. That alley was a creepy place. It felt like it never got light in there. Like a place where people didn't belong at all. A place already claimed by other things. Impatient with our intrusion. Weird thoughts. I shivered. Maybe the shades of the murdered soldiers were hanging around. Then Bowman conjured up a ball of light and hung it out overhead. That's better. It got spooky for a minute there. He was good for something after all. Yeah, Raven said. They started poking around. There wasn't a whole lot to see. I went over to a rubble pile to sit and wait them out. A fat rat sauntered past without so much as a nod to intimidation by a superior species. I chucked a hunk of broken brick at him. He stopped and eyeballed me over his shoulder, red eyes glowing. Arrogant little sucker. I grabbed another hunk of brick and this time put some arm behind it. He charged me. Rabbit, I thought, and tried to scramble up the pile while grabbing a broken board to beat him off. The pile collapsed. I went sliding down, kicking and cussing. The rat zagged out to be seen no more. He took him a good brag to hand his buddies. Raven got a big chuckle out of the whole thing. Hail, O mighty hunter, terror of rat kind. Stuff it. I rolled me over and saw about a square foot of raggedy-ass canvas peeking out of the rubble pile. I had me a stroke of cunning. I stood up, dusted me off, and sat back down. They went back to their sniffing around. I dug the thing out, decided it was somebody's backpack, then decided it might be why our villain had made a stand here when all he really needed to do was duck through that hole and leave the soldiers sucking dust. What have you got there? Raven yelled when he noticed. Bowmans didn't say nothing, but his beady little eyes lit right up. They caught on quick. Raven wanted to open the pack right there. Bowmans told him, this isn't the place. Anybody could come along. Raven thought about sneaking into the building the killer had used to make his getaway. Great idea, only somebody had boarded up the hole from inside. Guess we might as well take it back to the temple, he said. The soldiers were waiting for us at the end of the alley. There were a dozen of them, and they were ready for trouble. We would have walked right into them if we hadn't had a tame wizard along to sniff them out. We backed off to talk. Bowman supposed all the exits from the maze of alleys would be covered by now. Pretty soon they would come in after us. He could get us out right now, but that would take so much flash and show, it would get Exile all twisted out of shape.
Over the rooftops, then, Raven said,
like it was obvious and easy.
Great idea, but I'm an old man. Sneaking up on 500? A wizard, not a monkey?
Give him the pack case. He can cover his own butt and get it home to Mama. We'll play tag with the soldiers.
Say what?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
You're the guy with style. You play tag with them.
But I took the pack off. Bowman's wiggled into it. It was too big for him.
Softly, he told me, don't take silly chances. She'll want you to come back.
Chills up the spine and some more thoughts about what kind of a crazy man I was being here in the first place. Potato farming never looked so good. I don't know if Raven heard. He didn't give no sign. We went off and found a way up to the roofs, which was a crazy country of steep pitches, flats, chimneys, slate, copper, tile, thatch, and shingle. Like no two builders ever used the same materials. We stumbled and clunked around and did our damnedest to fall off and break a head or a leg, but something always got in the way. I might have been better off if I'd busted my bean. For a while, it didn't look like hunking around on the roofs was going to do no good. Whenever we took a peek to see if it was safe, there was some soldiers hanging out. But just when I asked Raven, how do you like pigeon? 'Cause it looks like we're going to spend the rest of our lives up here. Some kind of hurrah broke out back about where we left the old wizard, and every soldier in sight headed that way. I said, that silly sack probably did something subtle, like turn somebody into a toad.
Must you always be negative, Case?
Raven was having him a good time. Me, negative? The gods forfend. I've never had a negative thought in my life. Where'd you get a notion like that?
It's clear. Drop on down there.
On down, there was a two-story fall to a rough cobblestone landing. You're shitting me.
No.
Then you go first so I can land on you.
You are in a contrary mood, aren't you? Go on.
No, thank you. I'll just go find me a place where I can climb down. Maybe I crowded it a little. He gave me a nasty look and said,
all right. You do what you have to do. But I'm not going to hang around waiting for you to catch up.
He rolled over the edge of the roof, hung down, kicked out, let go. I know he'd done it just to give me some shit. And he got what he asked for, showing off. He sprained an ankle. When he slowed down cussing and fussing enough, I told him, you hang on right there. I'll be there in a minute. I wasn't, of course. I cut across a couple roofs and found a way to climb down into the street parallel to the one where I left Raven. I hitched up my pants and headed around the corner into the nearest cross street and ran smack into a whole gang of gray boys. Their sergeant laughed.
God damn! Here's one so eager he came running.
I guess I didn't react too well. I just stood there gawking for about 5 seconds too long. When my feet finally decided it was time to get moving, it was too late. There was five of them around me. They had nightsticks and mean grins. They meant business. The sergeant told me, "Fall in with the rest of the recruit soldier." I eyeballed about 10 numb-looking guys in a bunch, most of them looking the worst for wear. "What is this bullshit?" He chuckled.
"You just enlisted. 2nd Battalion, 2nd Regiment, or Home Defense Forces."
"Like hell."
"You want to argue about it?"
I looked at his buddies. They were ready. And I wasn't going to get no help from the other recruits. Not right now. We'll talk it over later. One-on-one. I gave him my best imitation of Raven's, "I'm going to make a necklace out of your toes" look. He got the idea. He wanted to try some bluster, but he just said, "Fall in! And don't give us no shit. We ain't no more excited about this than you are." So that was how I got me back into the Army. Chapter 55. Raven waited a while then, troubled, hobbled around looking for Case. He didn't find a trace. Case might have stepped off the edge of the earth. He could spend hours in a futile search that would keep him at risk himself, or he could go home and have Silent and Bowman's hunt the easy way. The pain in his ankle had awakened the old pain in his hip, so that he was stove up in both legs and moved with the spryness of an 80-year-old arthritic. It was no time for heroics. He had no trouble entering the temple, reaching the tower, and getting upstairs, except from his own body. Someone up top had been watching. Silent covered his progress with a curtain of gentle, selective blindness. Bowman's got after him before he got through the door.
"Where's Case? What happened?"
"I don't know. He disappeared. How about you do something for this ankle while I tell it?"
He settled with his back against the wall, leg out thrust. He told what there was to tell. Bowman's poked, prodded, and twisted. Raven winced. The wizard said, "Not much I can do but kill the pain."
"Silent, you know more about healing than I do."
Silent paused in his translation for darling, moved in on the ankle without enthusiasm. Bowman's puttered around, muttering,
"Got to come up with something of his he had long enough to make his own."
Grumble, grumble, paw through Case's few possessions, come up with his journal.
"This ought to do it."
He shuffled into a corner and went to mumbling and twitching. Silent did not do much more for Raven's ankle than Bowman's had. The pain was gone, but it still did not want to work right when Raven put his weight in it. He wasn't going to win any foot races for a few days. Everyone waited tensely for Bowman's. No one expressed the common fear that Case had been caught by exiled soldiers. Bowman's finally looked up.
"I need the city map."
Silent got it from Darling. Bowman's fussed over it a minute before saying,
"He's somewhere in this area."
Raven said,
"That's that open area where the wind whale dropped us."
"Yes."
"What the hell is he doing out there?"
"How should I know? Somebody maybe better go out there and find out."
"Oh, hell, me and my big mouth."
Darling had pointed at him, clicked her tongue, and winked. He was elected. Raven closed his eyes, relaxed for a few minutes, letting the tension and aches fade. Then he asked,
"What was in the pack?"
One of the Torques said,
"More money than I ever heard of one guy lugging around. It's in the corner. You want to look it over?"
"Don't know if I have that much ambition."
but he levered himself up.
Nothing there that was useful.
I tell you, I can't remember me a time when found money wasn't useful to me.
That did not sound promising. Raven went through the pack, was disappointed. He looked at Darlin. She signed, "Anything?"
He shook his head, but signed, "It does prove that the assassin, and therefore the murdered man, were linked with the theft of the spike. This stuff came from the Barrowland. Some of these kinds of coins haven't been in circulation anywhere else for centuries. But Bowman's told you that already."
She nodded.
"And he could not use anything here to get an idea where the man is? The way he did with Case?"
She shook her head. She got up and started pacing, pausing occasionally to look outside. After a while, she caught Silent's attention, signed, "Slip down and eavesdrop on Exile. Carefully. I do not want him getting too far ahead of us."
Bowman's did not return till after midnight.
"Where have you been?" Raven grumped. "You had us worried we were going to lose you, too."
"It's not that easy to get around out there. They have patrols everywhere, trying to keep another blow-up from happening. The fighting is sporadic tonight. Exile had Gossamer and Spider Silk doing donkey work, rounding up wizards and whatnot who came here to grab the spike.
That's where all the excitement is tonight. Excitement for the future is going to be provided by the cholera. It's showing up everywhere now."
Everyone glared at him.
"What about Case?" Raven snapped. "Get to the point, old man."
Bowman smiled. But there was no humor there. "He's gone back into the army."
"What?"
Darling flashed some signs at Raven. Raven said,
"She's right. Quit dicking around and tell it."
"They've put up a camp in that open area with a fence around it, and they're grabbing every man between 15 and 35 they can lay hands on. They're shoving them in there and calling them the Or Home Defense Forces Brigade. They may give them a little training so they can use them to do most of the dying if there's an attack, but I think the main reason they're there is Exile wants the most dangerous part of the population locked up, where it can't cause any more trouble for the Greys."
Darling signed, "How do we get him out?"
"I don't know if we can. He may have to get himself out."
He stopped them before they jumped all over him.
"I tried. I went to the gate and gave the guards a long sob story about how they had my only grandson and means of support. While they were still being polite, they told me there wasn't nobody going to get out of there. And anyway, they didn't remember taking in anybody by the name Philodendron Case. I think they would have."
Raven said, "He's technically a deserter, even if he's the only man from the guard still around. He wouldn't have given them his real name."
"I realized that while I was talking. So I gave it up before they got too angry. They were pretty reasonable, considering they'd had people after them all day."
Everyone looked at Darling. She signed,
"We will leave him there for now. He is safer there than we are here. We have the means if there is a desperate need to communicate with him. We have other matters to concern us. I suggest we give them some attention. Time is running out on us. And everyone else."
Chapter 56. Old Man Fish had grown first troubled, then frightened when Smeds didn't show. Smeds had cared for the problem posed by Tully Stahl alive, but how about the problem of Tully Stahl dead? The Greys had the body. If they identified it, how long would it be before they discovered who Tully had run with? Not long enough. Smeds had bought some time, but the sands and the glass kept on running and the bodies kept falling. That was the trouble with this thing. They kept beating the inevitable back, but always the margin was a little narrower afterward, and the cost of holding it at bay escalated and the price of failure became more dreadful while the payoff never looked any better. He felt no remorse over Tully Stahl. Tully had begged for it. The wonder was that he had lasted so long. But Timmy Loken bothered him a lot. Of the four of them, Timmy had been the least deserving of an unpleasant end. He was about to give up on Smeds and go back to hiding in the ruins when he heard how the Greys were conscripting all the citizens of military age they could grab. Intuition told him what had happened. Smeds was in the army now, which was probably the safest place he could be, if he'd had sense enough to give them a false name. The boy had sense. Old Fish headed for the ruins to tuck himself away from the eyes of the hunters, and on the way had him an inspiration. Why not hide in plain sight himself? They would argue a little because of his age, but they would take him. And it would be a damned good hedge against the coming privations of the siege. Soldiers, even militiamen, would get fed better than guys hiding in collapsed cellars. And the witch people running ore should protect their soldiers from the cholera more diligently than they would the general population. He headed for the camp the Greys had set up on the raised ground. It went about as he expected. They let him in after a little argument and a quick check for signs he was carrying cholera. He gave his name as Forto Rabus, which was a joke on himself and the Greys alike. It was the name he had been given at birth, but no one had used it for two generations. Chapter 57. For all the Black Riders had harassed the Limper into a frothing rage repeatedly with their tricks and traps and stalls, they had used sorcery very little. He did not understand their game. It troubled him, though he did not admit that even to himself. He was confident his own brute strength would carry him. Was confident there was no one else in this world any longer who could match him strength for strength. They knew that. That was what troubled him. They stood no chance against him, yet they harassed and guided him in a way that suggested they had every confidence in the efficacy of what they were doing, which meant a big and terrible pitfall somewhere ahead. They had used so little sorcery that he had stopped watching for it. His own style was smashing hammer blows. Subtlety was the last thing he expected from anyone else. It was not till he came upon the same disfigured tree for the fourth time that he woke to the realization that he had seen it before, that, in fact, his tireless run had been guided into a circle about 50 miles around, and he had been chasing himself for hundreds of miles. Another damned stall. He controlled his rage and found his way off the endless track. Then he paused to take stock of himself and his surroundings. He was a little north of the tower. He felt it down there, somehow mocking, daring, almost calling him to come try its defenses again. An affront it was. It seemed likely there was nothing his enemies would like more than to have him waste time beating his head against that adamantine fortress. So he put temptation aside. He would deal with the tower after he had taken possession of the silver spike and had shaped it into the talisman that would give him mastery of the world. He headed north, toward Orr. His step was sprightly. He chuckled as he ran. Soon. Now. Soon.
the world would pay its debts.
Chapter 58. Toad Killer Dog loped nearer the tower, uncertain why he tempted fate so. He sensed the limper running in circles north of him and was amused. These new lords of the Empire were not as terrible as the old, but they were smart. Maybe smarter than any of the old ones except the lady herself and her sister. He was satisfied that the power had passed into competent hands. Something he had heard some wise men say about the three stages of empire, the three generations. First came the conquerors, unstoppable in war. Then came the administrators, who bound it all together into one apparently unshakable, immortal edifice. Then came the wasters, who knew no responsibility and squandered the capital of their inheritance upon whims and vices, and fell to other conquerors. The empire was making the transition from the age of the conqueror to that of the administrator. Only one of the old ones was left, the limper. The heirs of empire were out to crowd him off history's stage. Conquerors were too rowdy and unpredictable to keep around if you wanted a well-ordered empire. He would do well to consider his own place in this non-chaotic future. He trotted to what he considered a safe distance from the tower gate, sat, waited. Someone came out almost immediately. A someone whose vision of the future had room for a timeless old terror, like Toad Killer Dog. They formed an alliance. Chapter 59. Smeds groaned as he pushed his blanket aside and rolled over. He had bruises on his bruises and aches in every muscle and joint. Sleeping on the ground did not help. This was the third time he had wakened in this tent he shared with 40 men. He was not looking forward to another day in the militia. "You all right, Ken?" a tent mate asked. He was using the name Kenton Anitya. "Stiff and sore. Guess I'll get a chance to work out the kinks before the day is over." "Why keep fighting them? You can't win." Someone looked outside. "Hey, it snowed. Got about an inch out there." Jeers and sarcastic remarks about their good fortune. Smed said, "Since I was a kid, people been kicking me around. I ain't gonna take it no more. I'm gonna kick back and keep on kicking till they decide it's easier to leave me alone." He'd had four fights with the Greys running their training platoon already. Another neighbor said, "You're getting to them, but your tactics aren't so great. Gotta use your head a little too." That was Cy Green. Already he was pretty much the leader inside the tent. Everybody figured Green wasn't his real name. He didn't wear it very good. Everybody figured he'd been in the army before. He handled the military crap like he was born to it, and he always let you know how you could make it easier on yourself if you wanted to know. The guys liked him and mostly took his advice. Smeds was reserving judgment. The guy was too much at home for him. He might be a spy, or maybe a deserter who got swept up by the Gray recruiters. Smeds had a notion that at least here in Orr, a deserter with a long military background probably had served with the guards at the Barrowland. "I'm open to suggestions, Cy, but I ain't going to back down. Look at what's going on, Ken. Originally, they worked on you because they wanted to show us what could happen if we weren't good boys. You provoked so easy, they kept coming back. Over and over, and probably again today, and I won't back down then either." "Calm down. You're right. It's gone past what's reasonable. But every time you see red,
you go for Corporal Royal.
Only because I can't get to the sergeant.
But the sergeant and corporal are halfway decent guys just trying to do a job that they don't think there's any point or hope to. Your real problem is Caddy. Caddy waits till they're a hair short of having you under control. Then he jumps in and kicks the shit out of you. Several of the men agreed. One said, Caddy has got his bluff in on the rest of them. Green said, and he's covered as long as he don't kill you. Smeds didn't really want to talk about it, but they were probably right about Caddy.
So?
Go after Caddy, if you have to go for somebody. He's the root of the meanness. He's the one going to hurt you. Make him pay. And try to put a leash on that temper. You gotta blow up, do it when you're right. Not just cause you don't like how things are going. Don't none of us want to be here. We keep our heads. Maybe we'll all get out of this. Smeds wanted to throw a fit right then, but he held back, mainly because he'd be doing it in the face of common sense, which would cost him the respect he had won. He was real worried about Smeds Stahl. Smeds Stahl was getting inclined to let himself get carried away. He did need to keep a better grip, or he'd end up doing himself in the way Tully did. He wondered if it was the influence of the spike. His determination to do right got a big boost at morning roll. Fortune was all smiles. The tent next on the left started earlier, and he overheard the corporal over there bellow. Loken Timmy. So he was ready for the trick when Corporal Royal tried it. He just kinda glanced around dumbly like everybody else and did not respond at all when Royal tried Stahl Smeds. They were getting closer. They knew the names now. He got another shock an hour later. They were stomping around in the mud, doing close order drill. His platoon passed another, headed the other way, and there in the outside file was Old Man Fish. Fish winked and skipped to get in step. Chapter 60. Exile watching had become a permanent assignment for Silent, and now it looked like it was paying off. He was excited when he slipped in. He signed,
"They have come up with the names of three men who were regular companions of the murdered man. Timmy Loken, Smeds Stahl, Old Man Fish."
"Fish?" Raven asked aloud.
Silent signed.
"Yes. The description was vague, but he could be the man who whipped you three."
"Old Man Fish."
Silent smiled wickedly but signed.
"They have been traced to a place known as the Skull and Crossbones, which is abandoned now except for squatters. But the Night Stalkers had a corporal billeted there till the night the riot started. They are looking for him. They think he can identify the men. Exile feels very close. He is mobilizing all his resources. Also, the Limpa is expected tomorrow."
Darling was excited. She looked like she had stumbled onto an unexpected answer. She clapped her hands, demanding attention.
"You will prevent them from bringing that soldier to exile. I want him. Deliver him to Lambert Gartson's stable."
She had worked hard, using her plain allies, to take stock of what little remained of the rebel cause. Gartson was it. "Likewise, identify and collect the owner of the Skull and Crossbones and anyone else who made an extended stay during the appropriate period. Be careful. They have made no great effort to catch us, but they know we are here. They will be alert for their opportunities. Outfit yourselves as Exile's guards. Let us go." They tried to argue. Arguing with Darling was like arguing with the wind. Faced with no other choice, they went with her, to guard her. They departed the temple one by one, unnoticed in the press. Darling gathered them two blocks away, took reports from plane creatures she had sent ahead, signed, "Exile's guards are billeted in the Treasury Annex. There are 12 there now, off-duty, silent. You and Bowmans will neutralize them. Not if you can or give it a try. Just do it." The men were rattled. They were not prepared for a head-to-head with a city very much in Imperial hands. They did not argue this time, though. Silent knew a spell for putting people to sleep, but it was verbally based. Pruned up in disgust, he gave it to Bowmans. The wizards went away. Darling gave them a 5-minute start. Silent awaited them at the annex door. He signed, "They are asleep." Darling countered, "I want them under so deep they will not awaken for days. Then hidden where they are not likely to be found." Silent scowled but nodded. Shortly afterward, as they donned a guise acceptable on the streets of Orr, Bowman said, "Let's keep it neat here. The longer it takes them to figure it out, the longer we've got to take advantage of their costumes." Raven grunted. Silent nodded. One of the Torques asked, "What are these brooch things with the garnet faces? Allegiance badges?" Silent examined one, set it down quickly, made signs at Bowman's. The old wizard looked at the brooch. "Allegiance badges, yes, but also a way for Exile to track his people. We'd better do something with them. Like have that idiot buzzard fly them out into the country." Darling signed impatiently. "All right, all right," Bowman's grumbled. "I'm hurrying as fast as I can." Another half hour passed before they left the annex. Darling, Raven, and Bowman's rode, guised as black riders. The rest went as foot soldiers. Wherever they went, people got out of their way. Once they cleared the city center, Darling and the injured Torque split off of the Guardsman stable. There was a talking stone there. Darling wanted to get in touch with Old Father Tree. The rest went off to see what they could do about keeping the Imperials from getting their hands on anyone who could identify the men who had stolen the Silver Spike. Chapter 61. After I figured out I was probably safer in the militia than hanging around Darling, I settled down and made myself to home. It was kind of comfortable back in the old rut. Didn't have to do no thinking or worrying. But I guess I spent too much time running loose. It got old fast. First time I felt like going out for a beer and couldn't, I knew I was getting out and staying there. That idea got a boost when the sergeant had us our first weapons practice. We stood around in the mud while the breeze gnawed on us. Half the guys weren't dressed for it. But that wasn't what got me. That was what the sergeant told us. "Listen up, you men. We just got word trouble gets here tomorrow. All the learning you're going to get today. You want a half-assed chance of getting through alive, pay attention. The only weapon we got to give you is the spear. So that's all we're going to work with." He indicated soldiers who had their arms wrapped around bundles of spears. The spear heads were inside wooden covers so nobody would get stabbed or cut. "These two new guys are experts. They was loaned to us by the Night Stalkers. They're going to run us through the drills. You don't do what they tell you, you get your butt kicked, same as if you don't do what I tell you." He gestured at one of the Night Stalkers. They all learned their piece at the same place, I think. The Night Stalker stripped the cover off the head of a spear. "This is a spear." He was going to blind us with illuminating information. But I'd played with these toys lots. Those other guys hadn't. Maybe some of them needed to be told. You gotta crawl before you walk, and walk before you run. Except my little brother Radish. The way I remember, he hit the ground running. "This edge is sharp enough to shave with.
This point will go through armor if you put some muscle behind it. The spear is a very versatile weapon. You can stab with it, jab with it, cut with it, slash with it. You can use it to hold your tent up or use it for a fishing pole. But one thing you can't never do with it is throw it. It ain't a javelin. You throw it, and you don't have shit anymore. You're meat for the first guy that wants you. So, rule one, and so forth, while we froze our butts off. Came to the part where they start sparring, going through the basic moves. The Night Stalkers called for 7 guys to pair off with our regular instructors. I was proud. The recruits had listened to me. Nobody volunteered. The Night Stalkers grabbed 7 guys and started them through the moves. The sergeant took 4 pairs and his buddy took 3. Just like I figured. When they got moving faster, the soldier named Caddy made him a chance to accidentally hurt the guy he was sparring with. The Night Stalker broke it up. 7 more. Come on. This one hothead named Ken Something was all set to go after Caddy and got his head busted good. I told a couple guys, hang on to him, cool him down, and don't let him pair off with Caddy. I went up and took the spear from the guy Caddy had decked. His nose was bloody. Clumsy as Caddy had looked, I figured I could stumble around and get in a lucky whack that would slow him down for the rest of the guys that would have to face him. I was rusty, but I used to be pretty good with the standard infantry spear. Always was about my best weapon. The body will betray. I went into a stance without thinking. Caddy looked puzzled. I figured he was mean because everything puzzled him. The Night Stalker came and moved my hands and feet and butt around into what he considered a more acceptable stance. When he had everybody set, he started us through the moves. It got hard to stay looking inept as they came faster. The muscles and bones remembered and wanted to do things right. Caddy decided to break my nose. When he went for it, I stumbled out of the way and accidentally whacked him in the shin. He barked. Somebody in rank said, yeah. Somebody else laughed. That did it for Caddy. He came after me. I stumbled around and tried to make like a scared kid trying to defend himself. Had we been playing for keeps, I could have killed him over and over. Then he gave me an opening a blind man couldn't miss. I tore up his left ear, tripped him, sent him sliding through the mud. I backed off, trying to look scared and unable to believe what I'd done. That's enough, our sergeant snapped. Give me the spear and get back in ranks, Green. Caddy! Go get cleaned up. Get that ear fixed. I surrendered the spear and moved. The guys were all working hard not to grin. Green! It was the Night Stalker sergeant. Come here. I went back. I stood at attention. He looked me in the eye, hard. Then he touched the cut on my cheek. He backed off, took a spear from one of the grays, removed the head guard, threw it aside. Give him a spear. He got real quiet. Everybody wondered what the hell, except my sergeant. I thought I knew. Queen's Bridge. But it didn't make no sense. It was over a long time ago. My sergeant tried to argue. The Night Stalker just growled, give him a spear. I gave him my best imitation raven look and tried not to shake too much as I took the guard off the spear somebody handed me. I didn't throw the guard away. That bastard was serious. I wasn't going to play around, and I wasn't going to give up a trick. He did some fancy moves to loosen up. My mouth felt awfully dry. When he turned on me, I shifted to a left-handed stance, which guys always have trouble with for a couple of minutes. I kept the guard in my right hand. He tested me with a thrust toward my eyes.
I brushed it away gently, just manipulating the spear with my left hand. I shot my right forward, cracked his knuckles with the guard. Cold as it was, that had to hurt like hell. In the second the pain distracted him, I brought my spear around, still one-handed, in a wild roundhouse edge cut at his throat. He threw himself backward to avoid it. I grabbed my spear with my right hand and went into a clumsily balanced right-handed stance, the butt of my spear forward. I flung myself and the butt of the spear straight ahead and got him under the ribs, taking the wind out of him. After that, it was just a couple of easy moves to disarm him and put him on his back in the mud with the tip of my spear at his throat. The whole thing didn't take 10-12 seconds.
"You're wrong," I told him. "I wasn't there. But if you was right, you should have remembered that the Night Stalkers are only second best, one-on-one."
I lifted the spear, stepped back, put the guard on, handed the weapon to Corporal Ryan, headed for my place in ranks. I prayed a lot as I did. Nobody would look me in the eye. The guys were all scared shitless. The Night Stalker took his time getting up. He was as pale as I've ever seen a guy get without doing a lot of bleeding, which he knew he could have done. He waved off any help. He recovered spear and guard and made a point of cleaning the weapon while 47 guys waited for something to happen. He looked around, said, "You learn something every day, if you're smart. Let's have the next 6 men up here." Everybody sighed, me included. The shitstorm was on hold for a while. I noticed that hothead Ken looking at my cheek like he never noticed the mark there before. Maybe the cold made it show up more. Chapter 62. With a little sorcery and a little luck, Bowman's learned that the men Exile had sent for the valuable corporal had just gone to Night Stalker headquarters and told them to produce him.
"Nothing like getting somebody else to do your work for you," Raven said.
"Sounds like a fine idea to me," Bowman said.
"Why don't we find a place and wait for them to bring him to us?"
As easily done as said. There was just one decent, straightforward route running from the Night Stalker's headquarters to the Heart of War.
"Finally coming," Bowman said.
"Silent, lay down that haze now. Don't make it so thick they smell trouble." Silent walked a ways away, just kind of stood there. People passing looked at him and stayed as far away as they could. Soon there was a stronger than normal smell of wood smoke. The air grew hazy.
"This is them,"
Bowman said of a tight little group approaching. As the group came abreast, the haze suddenly thickened. Bowman struck at the escort of 4 men, flattened them, called his favorite buzzard in to dispose of their allegiance badges. The 4 had been escorting a man and a woman. Silent looked at the female and started signing so fast only Raven could follow him.
"Brigadier Wildbrand," he said, "we have to take her too. You don't refuse a gift from the gods."
Despite their apparel, they got into the Gartson stable without attracting attention. Wizards were handy sometimes. Raven asked the man who met them, Gartson.
"Where is she?"
"Loft." Raven stepped around a small menhir, climbed, made signs one-handed. Neither the corporal nor Wildbrand had said a word yet. They had no real idea what their situation was, till Darling came to look them over. Wildbrand recognized her. The brigadier said,
"Oh, shit. It's true."
Bowman said, "Tell Darling we're ready to go get the rest of them." Silent's hands were fluttering. He ignored the old wizard.
he asked Darling, "Did you talk to the tree?" She answered his signs.
"Yes, he is troubled. He suggests we remove Case from that camp. Something happened there involving Case that he has heard of from his creatures. We will shackle these two and leave them with Gartson."
Silent started arguing. She donned the clothing of one of Exile's guards. Sometimes she used her handicap for all it was worth, as when she did not want to argue. Silent and Raven were livid. Neither one believed the tree had mentioned Case at all. Chapter 63. Smeds kicked his coppersworth into the discussion.
"I ain't hungry, and I ain't sick, and that's worth something, even if I gotta be sore and tired all the time."
It had been a hard day. Somebody said,
"Yeah, bet it's hell out there now."
Another said,
"What I'm wondering, suppose we whip the limper, then back to the same old horseshit till they find their silver what's it?"
The group grew quiet. That was the first anyone had mentioned the future. Nobody wanted to think about that. Smedge glanced at Green. Crowded as the tent was, there was a clear space around Green. Nobody understood what had happened this afternoon, but they did know there was going to be some shit come down about it. Nobody wanted to be too close to Green when it hit. Somebody said,
"The limper comes and the shit gets to flying. They're going to be too damned busy to watch me. I see the chance, I'm gone. Even if I have to stick Caddy or somebody."
The sergeant ripped open the entry flap.
"Fall out and fall in!"
"What now?" Smeds wondered. "More drills? Hadn't they done enough for one day? Hell! He was too tired to get pissed off." At least they hadn't been singled out. Every tent was spilling men. As soon as they formed up, the sergeant marched them over to stand with their backs to the stockade. Grays ran around with lamps and torches. Smeds caught a glimpse of Fish in the back rank of the platoon two to his left. The old man had done something to darken his hair. The sergeant called them to attention. Three dark riders came from the direction of the gate. A man in black walked beside each. They advanced slowly, studying each platoon. A review. Exile's men, down to give the raggedy-ass militia the once-over. Smets's stomach sank. They acted more like they were looking for somebody. But they passed Fish's platoon without pausing. Maybe it would be all right after all. The black riders passed the next platoon and started across the face of Smeds's outfit. The lead rider halted. One arm thrust out, pointing. Fingers danced. The footman beside the rider pushed in among the men. Smeds nearly messed himself. The dark soldier grabbed Green.
Smeds sighed. "Green, of course. The shit had to come down, didn't it?"
He was so turned inward, he missed the arm pointing again. Did not notice the two footmen coming till they were almost to him. His blood turned to ice. They took hold and dragged him out of ranks. The riders headed for the gate. Smeds trudged along behind Green, a horseman on his left and a foot soldier on his right. After the first overwhelming shock, he began to take control. He'd gotten out of a couple tight places already. He just had to stay calm and alert and move fast when his moment came. A minute after, they were in among buildings, masked from watchers in the camp. Green burst out laughing.
"You guys got more balls than brains."
He punched one of the riders in the thigh.
"Thanks."
Don't thank me. I figured you belonged in there. This was Darling's idea.
Yeah? Green laughed again. I'll remember that when your turn in the barrel comes.
Why'd you grab my buddy Ken?
She says he's one of the men who stole the spike.
Green looked at him.
No shit.
Smeds clamped down hard. Panic would not get him out of this one. Chapter 64. Fish understood what was happening the moment he glimpsed Exile soldiers pulling Smeds out of formation. He didn't really think, he just reacted. Everybody was intent on what the blacks were doing. He took a few steps back, turned, hoisted himself over the low stockade. A few of his neighbors in the platoon noticed but did not holler. Better, none got the bright idea of joining him. He dropped to the ground, ran, softly cursing his body for having aged well past the point where this made any sense for him. He was all aches and stiffness from the day's drills, and he doubted if he'd ever loosen up. But by damn, he wasn't going to give in to those imperial vampires or to the weakness of his flesh. He reached the uncleared ruins facing the stockade gate minutes before the riders came out. He crouched in darkness waiting and took stock. He had two knives. Because he had come in as a volunteer, the Greys had not searched and disarmed him the way they had the conscripts. But two knives weren't going to be much use against that gang. Craft was the answer. Like hunting and trapping and surviving in the great forest, craft and stealth and surprise. There were possibilities he rejected, like doing Smeds the way Smeds had done Tully. Smeds did not deserve that. It would do no good now because they knew who they were looking for anyway. Besides, Smeds was the only one who knew where the damned spike was hidden. He watched the silhouettes of the blacks come out. Before they left the cleared area, he was sure there was some game running. They weren't headed toward Exile's setup in the Goddess's Temple uptown, unless they were planning on going the long way. What now? Since he had expected them to streak straight to Exile, he was set near their most direct route. He would have to move fast if he wasn't going to lose them. He flitted through the ruins like a filthy ghost, making less noise than most haunts. He was very good at sneaking. One worry, not quite facetious, was that his quarry would smell him. 4 days before volunteering, he had been too pressed to clean up, and the days in the stockade had just been time to ripen. In the great forest, to survive with the savages prowled, you paid attention to how you smelled. He caught up quickly, was watching from 20 yards away when a couple of them started congratulating each other. The key word trumpeted. Darlin. He was thunderstruck. He hadn't really expected the White Rose Bunch to be scared off by his threats, but he hadn't figured them for so bold they'd take uniforms from Exile's people so they could ride into the training camp to spring one of their own either. This changed a few things. This made time less critical. This meant the odds were not nearly as bad. There couldn't be many of them left after the purges that had begun last week. Maybe, once they went to ground, he could pick them off. The big worry would be how aggressively they would press Smeds. He followed them so closely he might have been an extra shadow, and so carefully none of them got that chill on the neck sense of being watched. And, wonder of wonders, they led him to a place he knew. He'd only been in and out of Gartson's stable a few times, back during his flirtation with the rebel cause. But knowing anything about the lie of the land was better than going in blind. He had one scare shortly before the rebels reached their hideout. A big bird dropped out of nowhere and landed on the shoulder of one of the horsemen. The rider cursed and swatted at it. It laughed and started talking about how Exile was in a tizzy because he couldn't find some of his guards. Fish recalled that the White Rose called the Plain of Fear home, and talking creatures supposedly infested the place. His luck was with him still. He had to consider the bird's advent a good omen. Not so the man it had selected as its perch. He wanted the bird gone. The bird did not want to go.
"I'm riding from here," it said. "I can't see diddle shit in the dark."
Fish recalled the zoo they had been carrying the day he had seen them outside the Skull and Crossbones. There would be that to consider, too. After they went into the stable yard, Fish circled the place once, carefully. He did not spot any sentries, but that didn't mean they weren't there, hidden from the cold. It was getting chillier faster. And if that overcast was what he thought, it would be snow before morning. A snow cover would make getting around unnoticed a real pain in the ass. He faded into the shadows and went looking for a crawl-in entrance that used to be around back, where a lean-to junk shed had had the fence as its rear wall. It was there, still, after all those years, and looked like it hadn't been used since the olden days. He opened it very carefully. It did not make half the noise he feared, but what it did make sent chills scampering along his spine. He went in smoothly as a stalking snake. Something cat's eyes, that was not, started awake. He reacted first, his hand closing around its throat. There was another thing, like a mouse or chipmunk, that he stomped as he was stealing toward the main stable, where a ladder nailed outside led to the hayloft. It died without a sound. He went up the ladder like a syrupy shadow. The loft doors were secured only by a latch inside. He slipped a knife between, lifted it, eased inside. He dropped the latch into place. There was a little light from below. There were voices down there, too. And not 10 feet from him were a man and woman bound and gagged. The woman was looking his way, but not at him. He eased closer. By the gods, these people had their brass. That was Brigadier Wildbrand herself. And that corporal from the Skull and Crossbones. It fell into place. The Imperials and these people knew the names, but not the faces. That corporal would be about the best witness available. Down below, somebody started yelling at Smeds. Smeds didn't say anything back. Somebody else said, "Keep it down or the neighbors would think there was cholera here." Fish eased forward some more. "Corporal," he breathed, staying behind a bale. The soldier jumped, then grunted. Wildbrand looked for the source of the whisper. He might have been a ghost for all the luck she had. "You want to get out of here?" Another grunt. Affirmative. "They're going to ask you to look at a man and tell them who he is. Tell them his name is Kin something. You stick to that. When they bring you back up here, you're out of this. You don't stick to it. It's goodbye, Brigadier." The man glanced at his